I made a deal with this God that I didn't believe in. I said, God, if you're real, then you better turn my life around by this date. Because if you don't, I'm calling it quits and you're going to have to clean up the mess. That day came and it really was one of the worst days.
You really had a literal date on the calendar?
I had a date, and it's kind of like you just have that hope, right? That maybe maybe something's going to come out of nowhere. This miracle is going to happen.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Chapter 1, Joe Buchanan. Hi, I'm Meredith Foster, host of Epic. Joe is one of those nice guys, really genuine, kind, thoughtful, honest, the kind of guy you're just sure grew up in a tight-knit family that loved well. You would never believe that at one point the people around him believed he'd be in prison or on drugs or dead. We're so grateful that Joe's willing to share his story with us.
I was born in Kentucky back in the 1970s, and my mom was really young. She was like 15 at the time. My parents weren't married. My mom got pregnant with me, and her father basically told my dad, with a shotgun, if you will, so it was like a shotgun wedding, you will marry this woman. So my dad did, but my mom had a lot of issues growing up. And so she came from a very abusive background, very poor background. My dad tells a story of when they first started dating, he gave her a 6-pack of Pepsi for a present. And it was like the best gift that she had ever received in her life. And so he was her rescue. And I think that's how he felt about it as well, that he was going to be able to rescue her. So they had me less than a year later, they had my brother. And my mom just couldn't really deal with the stress and everything that goes into being a mom and never having really a good example of a mom. So my mom turned out to be really abusive, just a lot of different kinds of abuse, from physical abuse to being locked in closets and bathrooms. And my mom would disappear for a day and a half. When I was 4, my mom decided that my brother and I didn't deserve to live anymore. And so she fed us rat poison, told us it was candy. My brother thought it was candy, so he ended up with the worst end of it. I didn't like the way it tasted, so I didn't eat too much, but we both ended up in the hospital. He ended up in a coma for 3 months. Then my parents separated. I was taken from my mom and was staying with my dad. And my dad kept telling me every morning, you know, your brother's going to die today. Today's the day. I fully expected him to not make it. So I was already starting at 4 or 5 years old to deal with that. My brother did survive, but he ended up with some pretty severe brain damage and other issues as a result. The state of Kentucky didn't realize what was going on at the time that we were hospitalized. They just knew something was wrong, and it took them quite a while to figure out what my mom was doing. So for instance, when we were both in the hospital, bruises kept appearing on our bodies overnight. And so the doctor would come in the next day and there'd be bruises on our bodies, and they were testing us for like leukemia and different things like that. And finally, someone overnight had caught my mom actually beating us. And when asked, you know, why are you doing this? She said, because I've told people that they were going to die. I don't know if it was the sympathy that she got from that or what, but she needed to see that come to pass. So at this point, the state of Kentucky felt it wasn't very safe for us to be with my mom. And so we were ordered away from my mom. I don't remember a lot, but I know that my mom was put in a mental hospital at that point. And she was eventually ordered to have her tubes tied, that she could not have any more children.
How old were you?
About 4 or 5.
Okay.
So we were put in the foster care. We spent time in foster homes for the next 6 years, about 15 different foster homes, experienced a lot of abuse. And during that time, though, we were allowed to have some time with my dad and then supervised visits with my mom. And my mom got this new boyfriend that, for whatever reason, we were then allowed alone time with my mom and her boyfriend. Well, her boyfriend was extremely violent. And so, like, I'm blind in my left eye today because he hit me over the head with what is believed to be a 2x4.
I don't remember that.
What I do remember is being frustrated that I couldn't see out of my left eye. So I remember a season of several years not understanding why that was happening. My dad remarried during this time, and his wife, really not a very nice person either. Just very violent, a lot of physical abuse. So by the age of 10, I really had already started to have thoughts of suicide. Mm-hmm. Like, this just doesn't make any sense to me. And of course, moving from home to home to home, mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are going through your mind. There was one foster home at the age of 5 that I was in. Ted and Linda were their names, and they were a Christian home. And we were there for 1 year. So it was the longest stint that we were in any of the foster homes. And I call it my oasis period, because we see pictures of how we kind of bloomed during that time, how wow. God really poured into us. And she got really, really sick. And so they could no longer keep us. And so we went back into the system. And when we left there, Linda tells the story that they sat us down to say that we were going to be moving. And I just stood up and took my brother by the hand and said, let's pack our things. So at that point, wow. I already was used to moving. But see, inside, I remember that. And I remember being devastated yeah. that these people who said they love me again were giving us up. And so, you know, I grew up knowing something was wrong with me. I never really felt loved. In that one foster home for that 1 year period of time, I do believe that I felt loved, but I abandoned that feeling because of having to leave. So at the age of 10, I was in school, and I was pulled out during a class, and they said, you're going to be adopted. There's a family from Chicago, Illinois, going to come and adopt you. And in the foster home that I was in at that time, that was the worst foster home. And I was in that foster home 3 or 4 different times. They would make us eat food off the floor, very physically and emotionally abusive, stand in the corner for hours on end, just really bizarre behaviors. So we were excited that we were going to be leaving this home. But yet then again, we were very sad, especially my brother, because we didn't know what adoption meant. We didn't know what any of that meant.
Did you still have contact with your dad or mom at that point?
To some degree, but because my stepmom made my dad choose mm-hmm. between us, my dad didn't. In fact, I could have visitation with my dad. And I remember the last time I had visitation with him, he drove us back to the welfare office. And he basically sat down. We were right in the room. We were like on a chairs behind him, and he was basically telling them what a pain we were and what trouble we were and how it was ruining his marriage. And then he said, I remember Steve started to cry. My brother started to cry. And my dad looked at the welfare guy and he said, just please make sure they don't have to eat off the floor anymore. So he understood that we were having trouble with this, but at the same time, and as a child, you don't really fully understand what's going on. Now that I'm a dad, I kind of see a bigger picture. But at that time, I just knew something was wrong with me. So this family from Chicago was going to adopt us. We had to change our names. They wanted to change, you know, all of our name. But I really wanted to keep my first name. So Steve and I were able to keep our first names. But we changed our middle and last name, which for me was kind of painful because it meant that I had to leave behind a bit of who I was.
Who wanted you to change your name?
Our adoptive parents.
Interesting. And you were at that time, you were
just turning 10. And part of me was like, I remember that feeling of going, okay, maybe this is the fresh start that we needed.
Yeah.
You know, maybe leaving all the abusive stuff behind would be great. But then there was a part of me, when you're going into the unknown, especially with someone you don't trust because you can't trust, it was very difficult. Those parents turned out to be really abusive too. And so the abuse continued. They had no problem locking us in crawl spaces and closets. Physical abuse. My adoptive dad had high blood pressure, and so he's very hypertensive. And so it was really easy to irritate him to a point where he became physically violent. And so by the age of 15, I honestly decided I'd had enough. I didn't believe in God. I really thought God was kind of like the tooth fairy or Santa Claus, you know, even though I never had an opportunity to believe in it. And I was kind of humored at the way people would believe in Santa Claus. I knew he didn't exist. I always knew he didn't exist. So I thought that was what Jesus was kind of this legend. And when rubber hit the road, people would realize that he wasn't real. They're putting false hope. And so I made a deal with this God that I didn't believe in. I said, God, if you're out there, if you're real, then you better turn my life around by this date. Because if you don't, I'm calling it quits and you're going to have to clean up the mess. Now, inside, I knew there was no God. This was just kind of my reckoning or resolution with the end, right? Knowing the end is coming, it's inevitable. I'm just going to have one ditch effort. And if there really is a God, then maybe he'll do something. Well, that day came, and it really was one of the worst days.
You really had a literal date on the calendar?
I had a date, and it's kind of like you just have that hope, right? That maybe maybe something's going to come out of nowhere. This miracle is going to happen. So I think I had that hope that if I just held on, I always have this date. I can always do it this day. But if I'll just hold on, maybe there is truth to a God out there. That day was really a really bad day, just horrible at home, the abuse. And so I stormed out of the house and I went to end my life. And ironically, there was a kid that I went to school with. His name was Mike, and I had to walk past his house. When I walked past his house, his mother and him happened to be looking out the window, and they saw me walk by, and his mother said, "Something's wrong with Joe." I don't know if they thought I was going to run away, what the deal was, but she called my adoptive mom. And so when she showed up, I lost it. And I started saying things that I had been holding inside, like I want to die. And of course, I want to believe that she had my best interest at heart. But I think because of her need to control the situation, this was exactly what she wanted. So she called the police. And so I ended up in a hospital for 8 weeks. So about 7 weeks into my 8 week stay, we had a nurse on our unit. Her name was Lori Ann. And Lori Ann was only on our unit that one day. She was coming from a different unit to fill in or whatever. At the end of her shift was at lights out. So I was in my bed and she walked into my room. This is basically what she said to me. She looked right at me. She said, "You look like someone who really needs the Lord." And she handed me a Bible. It was a Gideon Bible. And now Lori Ann was beautiful. You know, she was really cute, very attractive. And to a 15-year-old boy who is very impressionable at that point and really wanted to die, here's a girl who's beautiful, has it all. She's got a job. She's got everything she could ever want. Why in the world would she need God? Why would God play a role in her life? She handed me the Bible. "You look like someone who really needs the Lord." And then she walked out. And so I took that Bible and I kind of thought it was a joke. I rolled my eyes, but I did this. I said, okay, fine. God, if you're real, then I need you. I don't know what to do with my life. I don't even have a life without you. If Jesus is real, then I need you to save me.
Joe Buchanan's story is powerful, and the best is still to come. God shows up in an amazing way. Stick around. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to Epic. We are so glad you're here. If you can't stick around, you can always listen to the podcast on our website. Find more information about Joe, or maybe you have a story to share. Tell us about it at myfaithradio.com. And now, the conclusion of Joe's story.
She handed me the Bible. "You look like someone who really needs the Lord." And then she walked out. And so I took that Bible and I kind of thought it was a joke. I rolled my eyes, but I did this. I said, okay, fine. God, if you're real, then I need you. I don't know what to do with my life. I don't even have a life without you. If Jesus is real, then I need you to save me. And I didn't pray it that eloquently. There was probably a couple of unpleasant words in there. But here's what happened. This is the best way I can describe it. It's as if I had been shivering my entire life. And if you shiver long enough, you forget you've been shivering, right? Until it stops. And that's what happened. And it was an emotional shivering my entire life. And in that moment, it stopped. And I knew that something had happened. And it really scared me because I had cussed at God. I had yelled at God. I had told God how awful he was and that he didn't exist and all of these things. And all of a sudden, it dawned on me, what if God exists? Now this God is angry with me maybe or whatever. I didn't realize at the time that it was the peace of God that I experienced. This incredible experience of love in that moment. And it really changed the trajectory of my life. And I didn't know I was loved. I still didn't believe I was loved. I didn't think I was lovable, but I knew that there was a God and that he had reached out to me. My adoptive parents weren't real thrilled with my newfound faith. They really thought that I had flipped over the deep end because I had this experience.
Did you share what happened?
I did. And I ended up in counseling, of course, and my counselor was incredible. His name was Mike. Mike had gone through a lot of the same things I went through. This is all, see what God is orchestrating here. So fast forward a year and a half or whatever it is till I'm close to 17. This entire time after I got out of the hospital after trying to end my life, my mom, who has a psychology degree, has been telling me that I'm crazy, crazy people don't know they're crazy. You're crazy. There's something wrong with you. You need psychological help for the rest of your life and all these things. And I'm fighting her on this. And eventually I get to a place where I go, maybe that's why she doesn't love me. She doesn't love me because she thinks I'm crazy. If I could convince her that I'm not crazy, maybe she would love me. But see, as a kid, you always want to be loved by your parent. And so I always wanted this family. I always had this dream of a family. And I found God. So maybe God will make that happen. And my mom wanted me to go in for an afternoon evaluation at a psychologist. I went in. The psychologist was like, no, you don't need to be here. You're going to have some adjustments to make because of the things you went through, but you're going to be just fine. You don't need to be in a psych ward hospital. So I went back into the lobby. And my mom went in to talk with a psychologist. And honestly, you could hear her yelling down the hall. He's pulled the wool over your eyes. You have no idea. Where did you get your license? Cracker Jack box, that kind of thing. And when they walked out of the office, he looked like he had literally been beat up. And he said, we're going to keep you for 3 days. So 72-hour evaluation. And at that point, I knew I was in trouble. Because my mom has a psychology degree. And I've seen her over and over and over get what she... The part of the story I haven't shared, just time constraints, is that my brother is currently in a psych ward hospital, my brother Steve. So she's already accomplished that. So for 3 days, ended up in this evaluation. That 3 days turned into 10 months. And then because my mom had to be part of those evaluations, probably by the third evaluation, I was starting to get agitated. Yeah. So I would prove her point in those meetings. She kept saying, he's in a honeymoon period. Well, 4 weeks in, my parents' insurance run out. So now I got to go home. And I remember the staff rallying around me saying, there's nothing wrong with you. You're going to go home now. My psychologist, the doctor that would come in and talk to me and say, I've recommended you go home. Well, my parents counteracted and had me interviewed at a state-run facility. I was familiar with that state-run facility because my brother had been in that state-run facility. I remember going to visit him and feeling so helpless and him screaming my name as I'm leaving. And I remember selfishly going, God, please don't ever let me end up there. And that's where I was being evaluated. Needless to say, they ended up keeping me for 90 days, which turned into another 9 months. But then I found out my caseworker, her name is Judy, comes to me and says, they found a group home, a shelter, where they think that you'll be able to go. It was the day after Easter of that year that I ended up in the shelter, and I stayed there for 3 months. And then I went and I moved in with a friend and finished high school. But it was during that time that I was finishing high school that my friend's mother just kept on me about forgiveness. And I said, I ain't forgiven nobody. These people did this stuff to me. I'm not letting them off the hook. There is no way. I was so much anger and I was growing so bitter. I was so mad. But it is funny how God pursues us because he loves us. I had to go to church because to live in that house, you had to go to church. That was the rule. So I went to church and of course they did a whole 20-week series on forgiveness. You know, and I'm in the middle of the night, I can't sleep. I turn on the TV and it's some body talking about forgiveness. God's pursuit was unbelievable. And finally, almost a year later, and I said, God, I'm done wrestling with you. If you want me to do this, I'll do it. I don't like it, but I will go and forgive them. Nancy was the mother's name. I said, you need to come with me, but I want you to sit in the drive. My mom hated Nancy. So I said, sit in the driveway. And if I'm not out in 20 minutes, come get me. Because I didn't even want to go in my house again. I had gone and tried to get some of my stuff right after I got out of the shelter and she disowned me, like yelled, get off my property. You're not my son. So I just went over there and I said, I just need a few minutes of your time. So I started to say, you know, it's been really hard for me, this, and my mom was not being receptive at all. And it was getting really bizarre. And I felt like God spoke right to my heart. He said, is this about you? Is this about you telling them what they did wrong? Or is this about you forgiving them? Almost like God, like a parent, like, I'm a little confused here. What's this about? And I felt like in that moment, God said, no, all that other stuff we'll worry about later. In this moment, you have come here to forgive them. If you forgive them, why are you bringing up the record of wrong? So I was like, okay, God, fine. So I looked right at her and I said, I just want you to know that I forgive you. And she went ballistic. I have nothing to be forgiven for. What I did for you was what you needed and all of this stuff. And it gets really kind of hairy, right? So I start to kind of make my way to the door. My adoptive dad is there as well, and he's been silent during this. And I looked at him as I was walking on. I said, I just want you to know I forgive you too. And he looked at me and said, I really appreciate that.
Wow.
So he understood. And I walked out got in the van and we're driving away. And of course, I'm emotional. I'm distraught. And Nancy just looks at me. She grabs my hand and she says, listen, you did what God asked you to do. Their reaction is on them, not you. And over the next couple of months, God did something pretty extraordinary. He showed me that it was me that he wanted to set free. That, yeah, in the end, if they surrender themselves to God and they get right with God, he'll set them free too. But in that moment, it was about me. And it was interesting that God asked me that question, is this about you? When it really was about me. It was about him setting me free. And I honestly wouldn't be here with you right now. The trajectory of my life, I wouldn't be married to Tara or have kids. I'd be a bitter, bitter person. When my parents adopted me, they fought the state of Kentucky on it by crossing state lines and all that. And the state of Kentucky told my adopted parents, do not adopt these boys. Statistically, based on what they've been through, they're going to end up in prison. And if by some miracle chance they're not in prison, they'll be dead by 15. I tried to kill myself as 15. I didn't even know that was spoken over me. If by some miracle chance they're not dead or in prison, they're going to be hooked on drugs. They're going to be basically killing people. So you can understand where my mom kind of got some of that stuff. But so she told me that when she disowned me that day after I got out of the shelter, she told me, you know what the state of Kentucky told me? And she told me those things. And it broke my heart at the time. And I began to pray about that. And God just spoke this to me. He says, yeah, but you're still alive. You've never spent a night in jail. You've never killed anybody. You've never done drugs. You know what the state of Kentucky forgot to figure into their statistics? The power of God and what God can do with a life surrendered to him. And I thought, man, God, that is amazing. I mean, that if you deny the evidence of God, how can you deny when you see that, right? So fast forward, God continued to do these extraordinary things in the healing process. So a couple of years later, I meet Tara, who is now my wife. We just celebrated 20 years of marriage. She's way out of my league. You know what I mean? Like when I saw her for the first time, this is the best way to describe it. The room was black and white. She was in color. And I remember I had made a commitment to God like about a week earlier that I'm not even dating a girl unless she's in love with you, Jesus. And I saw her and I said, God, send me a girl like that. That's the kind of girl I'd love to marry. Now here's the deal. I thought she was way too young. I wasn't even considering her at all. I just, her love for God and her beauty and just everything about her was amazing. And fast forward 6 months, we started dating.
Whoa.
Yeah. And her dad called me her man friend because I was a little bit older. And now that my daughter's the same age, I wouldn't recommend that at all. But I was driving over to her house probably 2-3 weeks after we were dating, and God was reminding me of how special Tara was. In other words, if God loved anybody on the planet, I knew he loved Tara. She was loved by the church. She was that special kid that everybody gravitated toward. Tara had whole books of the Bible memorized. She still does. She's my walking concordance. But she would walk to school. And I asked her one day, I said, why in the world are you walking to school and you can ride the bus? She says, it gives me more time with God. And so as I'm driving over, God's reminding me of all this. And I'm getting defensive because here's what I think is happening. I think God's going to say to me, if you ever hurt this girl, you're going to have to deal with me. So as I'm driving, I'm like, oh yeah, I know God. And finally God goes, and this, it wasn't audible, I promise you, but it might as well have been. In a stern voice, God says, you know how I feel about her, right? That's what I heard in my heart, impressed so hard. And I had a stern response. Yes, God, I know. And what I was about to say is, please don't let me hurt her because I don't want to have to deal with you. But before I could get those words out, God spoke this to my heart. I'll never forget it. He said, that's how I feel about you, Joe. And I had to pull the car over because I couldn't see and I couldn't think. And I just felt the embrace of God for the very first time in my life. I felt like someone actually loved me. And I got to tell you, it changed the whole trajectory of my life. Everything changed from that moment. I really, truly believe if we knew how loved we are, and even those that know they're loved still question it, right? I think it's a part of being human. But if we knew how loved we really were, then there's nothing that we couldn't accomplish for him.
It's one amazing story. Big thanks to Joe Buchanan for sharing it with us. You can learn more on our website and even see a photo of Joe with his parents when he was a baby and they were teenagers. You know how they say a picture is worth 1,000 words? You'll want to see it. You can find a link to this podcast at myfaithradio.com. Special thanks to Stefan Johnson and Jason Rackow for creating the show theme. And huge thanks to Jason for bringing his talents to the show. Creative input, editing, production, he brings it to life. I'm your host, Meredith Foster. If you enjoyed this podcast, I hope you'll share it with a friend. And if you have a God story, somebody needs to hear it, share it with us on our website, myfaithradio.com. See you next week.